This is Jacqueline Tobin, author and Range Vendor Magazine Editor-in-Chief, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy!
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, Episode 43. Nikon can't spot an obvious composite. In this episode, Nikon awards a prize to a badly photoshopped photo, Sony's sensor sales slide, try saying that five times really fast, DxO Mark doesn't rate Fujifilm cameras, AP gets sued, Getty's co-founder steps in it, all that and more in episode 43 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much for opening the show, Jacqueline. I greatly appreciate it. Jacqueline Tobin is the editor-in-chief of my favorite magazine, Rangefinder. Not just my favorite photography magazine, my favorite magazine in general. But you know what? I'm a huge photo nerd. You may know that her magazine is the official publication of WPPI, that's Wedding and Portrait Photographers International. They have a massive expo every year that many of you guys out there attend. If you haven't seen Rangefinder magazine yet, you've been missing out. It is outstanding. And the great part is, you don't even necessarily need to be a WPPI member. I'm not, and I get it. Each month, you can get a print and or digital edition that's available online. And if you want to check that out, go to rangefinderonline.com. Jacqueline is also the author of two books that you can find on Amazon and elsewhere. Wedding Photography Unveiled, Inspiration and Insight from 20 Top Photographers, and The Luminous Portrait about photographer Elizabeth Messina and her work. And Jacqueline also spent 26 years at Photo District News. PDN, as you may know it, is a great industry publication. Jacqueline knows her stuff, and I'm happy that she took the time to open today's show for us. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 43 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you telling your friends as well. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Uh-oh. Someone at Nikon Singapore needs to calibrate their monitor. And quick. Now what the heck am I talking about? Alright, check this out. A quite embarrassing, but mostly hilarious error by Nikon Singapore centers around a photograph which was submitted to a contest of theirs that purported to be of an airplane flying perfectly dead center as the photographer shot looking up a ladder and the cage surrounding it, which was attached alongside a building. Now, anyone who looks at a photo like this would instantly realize that the chances of anyone capturing a plane doing this is slim and none. It's just not likely. I mean, what are the chances? You could wait there looking up the ladder for, 100 years or so, waiting for an airplane to appear and be heading perfectly in the correct direction, all perfectly lined up, and it probably still wouldn't happen. Not only that, a huge clue might have been the white rectangle that surrounded the airplane. Yeah, that. It's clearly an all-black airplane from clip art on an entirely white background that was just pasted into the photo. You know, the photographer didn't even try to remove the white box and make it look real. It should have been so obvious. Again, this scene was unlikely to happen, but the dead giveaway should have been the pixelated plane with the giant white box around it. Now, who might have seen through all of this? Oh yeah, a camera company, perhaps. Especially one that was running a photography contest. But no. Somehow, Nikon Singapore missed this. So, they made an announcement on their Facebook page and congratulated the photographer, Shay Yu Wei, stating, quote, Yu Wei chanced upon a set of ladders while on a photo walk with his friends in Chinatown, and thought the view above would make an interesting perspective. Little did he expect to catch an airplane mid-air. We'll try looking up too, Yu Wei. End quote. Well, it didn't take long at all for photographers to point out that this photo was clearly a composite, and not a very good one, by the way, and that he shouldn't receive the Nikon-branded trolley bag that they had as the prize. What ensued were tons of sarcastic comments, as well as people photoshopping other impossible items in place of the airplane. On Instagram, the photographer was asked how long he waited for the plane, to which he replied, quote, not too long, I was lucky, end quote. As I record this, Nikon Singapore's post is still up on Facebook with thousands of comments and over 21,000 shares. We here at Petapixel reached out to Yue for comment, and while it's too long to read here in the show, here's a bit of what he said. Quote, I am the one who submitted the Chinatown plane post, and I would like to address it. I've been quiet so far because I've been trying to contact Nikon, and I've been waiting for them to contact me back to discuss about this. I understand that what I would say might affect Nikon's brand, hence I decided to wait for their advice. However, since more than 24 hours have passed and I have not managed to have discussions with Nikon, I think I shouldn't wait and it's important for me to come out to address this issue. End quote. Now, in the rest of his statement, he goes on to say that he was on the photo walk, shot the photo, and later felt that it would look better with a plane in it. So he inserted it with PixArt and uploaded it to Instagram. He explains that he didn't mean to dupe anyone. It was just a quick edit. He thought it was obvious and he put it up on his Instagram account. And that's probably where it should have stayed. But as he said in his statement, quote, I made a mistake by not keeping it to Instagram as a casual social media platform. I crossed the line by submitting the photo for a competition. I meant it as a joke, and I'm really sorry to Nikon for disrespecting the competition. It is a mistake, and I shouldn't have done that. End quote. Now, I don't know what's exactly going on here. You know, you either have to take his word for it or think that he was up to no good trying to win the prize. I don't know. Either way, it's craziness. The weirder part, however, is that Nikon Singapore has somehow not figured this out and how they've handled it since. They responded to some of the trollish comments on social media, and you know what? That just never goes well. People are trolling you for a reason. People do it to me all the time. They're looking to get a response. You just don't respond back to them. And they've kept the photo up and haven't talked about what they're going to do exactly with this. Now, if you haven't seen it yet, hit the show notes for episode 43 at petapixel.com/podcast. You'll also be able to see all the various other versions of this that people have created while poking fun at it and how ridiculous it is. But what I want to know is he getting the prize? I don't think he has. But so far they haven't said. Stay tuned. As you may know, I'm a Lightroom user. But we'll see how long that lasts. I'm looking into Capture One of late. Lightroom is so darn slow, but I'm not going to say anything more on that today. There's really nothing new on that front. It's still slow for me. What can I say? But what I'd like to mention is that in the latest update for Lightroom, as well as in Adobe Camera Raw, in addition to the various bug fixes, lens and camera support, is the introduction of a feature that is pretty darn cool. And that new feature is called Boundary Warp. If you've ever created a panorama of stitched images, you're aware that there's often missing pieces around the edges, which present quite a dilemma to you. Do you crop that white space out? Or do you hit Photoshop, give Content Aware Fill a try, use the clone stamp or whatever to try to fill in those spaces? Or spend more time with your family? Well, now that decision's been made a whole lot easier thanks to Boundary Warp. Through the magic of computational photography, a little bit of magic, and crushed unicorn horns, all right, maybe not that, this new feature analyzes the boundary of your panorama, then warps the image so that the edges fit into a rectangle. This is pretty darn sweet and solves a problem that many of us have had with our panos. You know, unless you're shooting them with a tripod and over the nodal point, you're not exactly getting ideal panos. But Boundary Warp fixes that. Mostly. I suspect that it's not always going to produce the best results. However, if you've got Adobe Lightroom CC 2015.4, Lightroom 6.4, or Camera Raw 9.4, all of which are available right now, maybe give this a shot first and see if it gets you there a lot quicker. And I'm not going to lie, this is a pretty darn sweet addition, so props to Adobe on this one. If you've been considering the Ice Light, which is really cool, but $500 and that seems a little bit too steep to you, check out the Yongnuo YN360 LED Light Wand. And at just $62 US, why not, right? The company says that the upcoming light wand is the industry's first LED video light that combines full-color RGB SMD lamps and LED lamp beads. There are 40 of those RGB lamps, 160 LED lamp beads with a color temperature of 3,200 degrees Kelvin, and 160 LED lamp beads that have a color temperature of 5,500 degrees Kelvin. In full-color mode, The 40 RGB lamps give you rich red, green, and blue colors, while the other beads allow the stick to be adjusted from 3200 degrees to 5500 degrees Kelvin. Young Nuo says that the CRI is 95 or higher. That's the color rendering index, so it should be more truer colors. In the past, LEDs were way off. Now, they're about spot on. If you're not familiar with the Ice Light or this new product, these continuous LED lights are another way to light your portraits, light your scenes, without the use of a strobe. And being able to see where the light falls because it's a continuous light is a great way to learn. And you know what? If it gets you there quicker, that's even better. And what's really cool about this light wand from Young Nuo is that it can be controlled through a special smartphone app where you're able to select the color from a preset color palette or manually create your own. And you can also control luminance values on the wand or through the app itself. Like the Ice Light, the Young Nuo YN360 has a dimming feature, so that's extremely helpful as well. There's a tripod mount in the base of the wand's handle should you want to place it on a stand or on a tripod, I guess. And the unit is powered by the readily available Sony NP-F750 type batteries, which yield approximately 2 hours at max brightness in the Kelvin modes, or 4 hours at max brightness in the RGB full color mode. And if you don't want to go the battery route, you can also power this wand with a power adapter as well, but who wants cords if you don't need them, right? Young Nuo tells us at Petapixel that the YN360 light wand is set to launch sometime around March 2016 or so, with a price tag of about $62 US, as I said. I think it's going to be interesting to see how well this works and how it compares to the Ice Light. $500 versus $62? You know, you either have that kind of money or you don't. And for $62, if you can get similar kind of light, all the better. Hey, you can get a bunch of these, right? Young Nuo makes some pretty darn great products. You know, you're likely familiar with their flashes, which are pretty darn close to the Nikon and Canon versions, but at a fraction of the price. I mean, we're talking $100 versus $500. Amazing. And also, they've started making lenses, and those aren't too shabby either. It's been interesting to see how Young Nuo has become a player in the industry. And hey, the savings are definitely appreciated because photography is expensive. Have you ever wondered why DxO Mark doesn't test Fujifilm cameras? Honestly, I didn't even notice, as I don't think they're the end-all and be-all. But you know what? Some people put a lot of stock in their ratings, and that's fine. But remember, they're testing sensors. They can't tell you if a camera is right for you or not. And I can't count how many people have told me they bought a camera based on a DxO Mark rating, then returned it or sold it later because it wasn't the right camera for them. And hey, the one they ended up with scored lower. Imagine that. Anyhow, a listener of ours wondered why the French company seemingly shunned Fujifilm cameras, so we reached out to them and finally got an answer. And you know what? It makes a lot of sense. And the answer is, DxO Mark simply can't properly test the X-Trans sensors that are used inside Fujifilm cameras. It's that simple. If you look at their online database, you'll notice that the last Fujifilm tested was the X-F1 way back in 2012. Way back. It was like 4 years ago. But you know what? In this business, that was forever ago, huh? Well, also in 2012 was the introduction of the Fujifilm X-Pro1. And that was the first X-Series Fujifilm camera to have an X-Trans sensor in it. Thus, no newer Fujifilm cameras are on the site. We reached out to DxO Mark, as I said, and here's what they had to say. Quote, "We do not measure X-Trans sensor because of the specific technology. We would need a lot of time to adapt our protocol for such sensor, and we did not have the chance to do that. It's a bit technical, but here is the main issue. The X-Trans file do not support the Bayer pixel mapping. That means that we will need to develop specific reader to read those specific raw files and then apply a lot of changes on our measurement protocol," end quote. Now, that was a little bit messed up English, of course, because it's coming from France, and so I'm just reading it to you exactly as we got it. So I want you to know I didn't mess up reading that. That's exactly how it came in. And I'd like to thank the listener very much who emailed in about this, because if you hit the DxO Mark site and you were looking for the latest and greatest Fujifilm cameras and you didn't see them on there, you were probably scratching your head going, what the heck's going on here? But you know what? Mystery solved. Next. Here in America, if you photograph someone and those photos are used commercially, you need a model release. If you don't, you run the risk of getting sued, and that could be very expensive. And that's exactly what's happened, as a Muslim woman, Fifi Yusuf, has filed suit against the Associated Press and AP photographer Mark Lenahan. This centers around a photograph of Yusuf wearing a traditional headscarf while sitting inside a Starbucks last December 16, 2015, a photo which was then made available for licensing through the Associated Press website. Well, on December 21st, 2015, the Washington Post licensed and used the photo to illustrate an opinion piece titled, quote, "As Muslim women, we actually ask you do not wear the hijab in the name of interfaith solidarity," end quote. The use of the photo was particularly offensive to Yusuf when she read comments on the Post website that she didn't at all appreciate. The complaint says, quote, "Clearly the article attacked Yusuf's fundamental beliefs. Plaintiff has been dismayed and deeply emotionally upset by defendant's use of her photograph for advertisement and trade purposes, classifying her as hijab, Muslim, Islam." Those are the key words that were used on AP's website, by the way. End quote. Yusuf is accusing the photographer and the Associated Press of violating New York's right of publicity statute, which reads in part, quote, "Any person whose name, portrait, picture, or voice is used within the state for advertising purposes or for the purposes of trade without written consent first obtained may sue and recover damages," end quote. The woman's attorney, Daniel Zalkowitz, tells the New York Daily News, quote, "This case is pivotal because there was no legitimate newsworthy purpose to taking her photo. There is nothing newsworthy about a woman in a hijab sitting in a Starbucks on her cell phone," end quote. Now, it's important to note that she's not suing the Washington Post, which published the photo, since the publication can legally use stock photos under the right of publicity laws for news and opinion. Now, a law professor told the Post that he doesn't think that she has a claim under that statute, and Photo District News' David Walker agrees, saying, quote, "The case is a legal long shot, but if she wins, wire services and freelance photojournalists, at least in New York State, would have to get the consent of everyone in the photographs they offer for licensing to publishers." Yusuf says in her claim that AP's sale, i.e., you know, licensing for fees, of images, including the image of her, amounts to commercial use in violation of the state law, but she faces an uphill battle, end quote. Now, I tend to agree with their assessment. I'm no lawyer, but I just can't see a court siding with her on this. And if they do, it'll be appealed because the news industry definitely will have a problem with that. But I think we can all see how she would be upset by this. You know, imagine having your photograph taken, and then the headline is something that is so against your beliefs and your religion, and you're used to illustrate that. You definitely wouldn't appreciate that at all. I know I wouldn't. If you follow this industry closely, and you're all caught up with the past episodes of this podcast, you know that Sony has been on fire of late. Well, now it looks like the fire isn't raging quite as much as it once was. The company just released its earnings for the last quarter, and they're reporting a significant decrease in image sensor sales. Significant was the word they used. And this is quite surprising because all you ever hear, including here on the podcast, is how great Sony's been doing. Well, was doing, I guess. As we know, an incredible 40% of all image sensors sold in 2014 were made by Sony. That is just incredible. Also, they raised a whopping $4 billion in funding in 2015 so they could ramp up sensor production because they were having a hard time keeping up with demand. Remember, they not only make sensors for their own cameras, they make them for most, if not all, Nikons as well, and tons of smartphones. So much sensor demand that they even decided to spin off that sensor business into its own company. But during the fiscal quarter ending December 31st, 2015, Sony saw a 12.6% decrease in sales in its devices segment. The company says, quote, "This decrease was primarily due to a significant decrease in sales of image sensors, reflecting a decrease in demand for mobile products," end quote. In other words, the smartphone business is cooling down, and that translates into less Sony sensors being needed for those smartphones that aren't being sold, of course. Now, Sony had an operating loss of $97 million in that quarter, compared to the $400 million operating income the same quarter 1 year earlier. So think about that. That's nearly a $500 million difference. Projecting demand for its sensors into the future, the company is forecasting, quote, significantly lower than expected sales of image sensors and camera modules, reflecting a decrease in demand for mobile products. There is a possibility that factors such as a decrease in projected future demand could continue to have a negative impact on the business going forward, end quote. Now listen, no one is crying for Sony. They're still doing extremely well, the best that we can tell. However, if you have less money available to develop sensor technology, no matter if it's for cameras or if it's for the cameras in smartphones, that's got to affect you in some way or another. So we'll see how this plays out, but I think things are going to be okay. They just might not be as awesome as they were before. As we reported in episode 41, Visual China Group acquired the massive Corbis Images Collection, a deal which makes it so that images in that collection can be sold exclusively through Getty Images. Now, many photographers were skittish about this deal, wondering about their future image sales and, of course, paychecks. However, amid this, as if that wasn't bad enough, Getty Images co-founder and chairman Jonathan Klein took to Twitter to celebrate his success in snagging Corbis, saying, quote, "Lovely to get the milk, the cream, cheese, yogurt, and the meat without buying the cow," end quote. He was, of course, talking about his company being able to handle that content rather than having to buy it. It was a success for him. And it seemed clear, but as you may imagine, some took his comments in the wrong way, and boy, were they pissed. One Twitter user tweeted to him saying, quote, "Lots of people lost their jobs during your struggle for dominance. Don't be a classless jerk," end quote. To that, Klein responded with, quote, "Getty Images have nothing to do with the acquisition. We are simply distributing the content and paying royalties," end quote. But it was the way he talked about this deal in under 140 characters that really rubbed people the wrong way. Another Twitter user called him out on this, saying, quote, "I worked at Getty for 17 years. I find your comments cringeworthy. At least consider the people who lost their jobs. Hashtag lame," end quote. He responded pretty much reiterating what he had said to the other Twitter user, but of course he kept getting hammered by people. Now, also in episode 41, we told you about Demotix, or Demotix, who knows how it's pronounced, the freelance photojournalist network with its 50,000 contributors around the world. Many of those contributors were up in arms about this deal, as they received no notice about this for days. And the Demotix, or Demotix, whatever it is, .com website redirected to that of Corbis Images, which had acquired them back in 2010, of course. These contributors had no way of accessing their images and wondered about the status of money that was due to them, and they took to Twitter to complain about it, of course. Well, on the Demotix, or whatever it's called, Twitter account, a post by them reads, quote, "VCG has purchased the Demotix brand and content. VCG will communicate next steps with Demotix contributors as soon as possible," end quote. Now, tomato, tomato, Demotix, Demotix, whatever they are, either way, they have tens of thousands of contributors and left everybody hanging, so that's a bit of a problem. Now, the website Quartz and many others have pointed out that with this sale of Corbis Images to VCG, some of the most iconic and sensitive photos from China's recent history are now under the control of a Chinese company. You know, think Tiananmen Square and tanks here, right? Quartz writes, quote, "A bigger concern is that a Chinese owner might choose to restrict or be compelled to restrict the use of sensitive images internationally. That would amount to, in effect, China's censorship affecting a global audience. So far, nothing suggests this is likely," end quote. I guess time will tell, so stay tuned and we'll let you know what happens. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 43 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lenshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lenshark. That's LENS. SHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 44. Well, it's f8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.